everyone, to the ProWrestling.net All Access Podcast. My name is Chris Shore, and joining me back from vacation, he took a couple of weeks off here, but Jake Barnett is joining me again as we break down WWE SmackDown that aired on August the 10th, taped on the 7th in Houston, Texas. Jake and I do this audio review for you every Saturday. But it's not the only audio that we do around here on the site. Each and every week, we do over 6 hours, sometimes pushing 7 hours of audio each and every week, but almost all of it is exclusive for our .NET members. Jason Powell does a WWE Raw review, and Will Pruitt does a TNA Impact Wrestling review. Will and Jake get together every Wednesday for the .NET Countdown, where they look at the best and worst in professional wrestling for each week. Jason Powell does a Q&A audio where he answers both wrestling and non-wrestling questions. And Jason and I get together on Thursdays for .NET Weekly. We call it our flagship show. It is a news review show where we break down all the news of the week, often break news that's not even made its way to the main site yet. Again, almost all that audio exclusive to our members, as is the ad-free version of the site, the .NET member forum, and the .NET member blog section. It's all one big package for you, folks. All you got to do to become a .NET member, head over to ProWrestling.net, look on the right-hand side of the page for the .NET member sign-up link. Click there. We will get you started. $7.50 a month if you take the month-to-month option, but take the annual option. We'll knock $2 off each month. Save you $24 across the year on the annual option. Great time to sign up. Lots of things going on. SummerSlam right around the corner. Jason and I will be doing a review of that next week as well. That will be exclusive to members, so now's your opportunity to head on over to .NET and click on that right-hand side of the page. We'll wait for you here. Now that you're all back from signing up, Jake, let's talk about this show. We've got one. This was, you know, two SmackDowns left to sell SummerSlam, counting this one. They've got one more now. We've got a lackluster World Heavyweight Championship match in Sheamus versus Alberto Del Rio. And, you know, because we've already seen it, we saw Sheamus win clean at the last pay-per-view. So it's not a lot of heat on this. Yes, we had the angle on Monday with Sheamus running off with Del Rio's car. But, you know, just not a lot of real fire underneath this because this has been going on for a while. And it's been pretty much so one-sided with Sheamus getting the better. And so we start off with a hot angle tonight, and that leads to a championship match. It ends up not being a championship match. And now we've got word. We have video that WWE has released right after SmackDown went off the air of Booker T flipping out, and he has canceled their match at SummerSlam. He says that Del Rio will not get his title shot at SummerSlam. What the hell are they doing here? I mean, how do you sell a pay-per-view on a match that now is not going to happen?
You know, it's hard to put together exactly what they're doing at this point. I mean, it seemed kind of doomed from the start. This car angle is, it just didn't make a whole lot of sense for Sheamus' character to begin with. And they tried to make a bigger deal out of it tonight, which was basically the major angle on this show. And I mean, I think Del Rio was better tonight, but there's just not enough momentum with this feud, and Del Rio has been pretty well emasculated as a heel continuously. I mean, he seems to get these moments on television, but he really hasn't been all that stellar, as far as getting wins in big matches. So I don't buy him as a credible threat to the title, and Sheamus really hasn't been that good in this feud. And none of the matches canceled, I'm assuming this is, you know, we're either going to get a triple threat or something is happening with this match, but it's hard to predict, and the story thus far just hasn't been that good, period.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, where do you think they go from here? They have to have Del Rio in this match in SummerSlam in some way. I just can't believe they're going to just cancel the match. There's going to be, at least with Del Rio, I don't think it's Sheamus versus Del Rio anymore, obviously, but I don't think that, you know, we're not seeing Del Rio in a match at SummerSlam. And Randy Orton has come right out on Twitter and said he's not wrestling. Of course, granted, it could be added last minute. And he's just trying to, you know, to keep kayfabe as far as that goes. But what do you think they do? Do you think Orton gets stuck in this somewhere? At first I thought Rey Mysterio might be involved, but it looks like he's going to be doing something else. Orton is sitting out there. He may be getting punished from the suspension. He may not, but he's the one guy who's kind of sitting out there that doesn't really have anybody to work with right now. Do you think we end up with Randy Orton in a triple threat now?
It seems to be the most obvious. I mean, if they wanted to move the title off of Sheamus back onto Orton, putting him in a triple threat so he could, you know, potentially beat Del Rio and not actually, you know, pin Sheamus would continue that feud nicely. So I almost always thought when Sheamus came back, he would just kind of pick up where he left off in that feud with Sheamus that was actually, you know, pretty interesting while it lasted. So that would make sense to me.
Yeah, I kind of thought that too. I don't know. I mean, this is really strange. I assume we're going to get Sheamus versus Del Rio in some semblance. It's either going to be a gimmick match or they're going to add a third person. I can't believe that Sheamus is going to take not being able to get his hands on Del Rio. So, I mean, it may just be as simple as they're trying to turn this into a gimmick match, try to put more heat on it. When, you know, the match itself is suffering, the feud is suffering because of how poorly they booked Del Rio even prior to this. And, I mean, his first run for the championship and his actual championship reign. And, you know, just they've really mismanaged the guy for a long time. And it's not his fault in that sense that he can't, he can't get this gimmick over. Now, to be fair, he's not been very compelling in what he's been delivering either. So, I mean, he's not totally blameless here, but you're right. I mean, as you said a few minutes ago, he's been very weak and weakly positioned. But I thought was pretty good here tonight. The other big news for the day, and it doesn't so much affect the show, this individual show, as it does just, you know, WWE in general going forward, AW's release. AW did appear on SmackDown. Of course, this was taped on Tuesday. AW released on Friday night. Or late Friday afternoon, as I was supposed to be running the site and asleep and woke up just in time to find out that AW had been released. So thanks again to .NET member Kid Mojo for pointing that out to me. But he was released. He did appear on the show, was in a match that lasted just a second. I don't know if it was cut that way. I want to go back and read the correspondence report or spoilers. I meant to do that before we started recording and forgot. But I do want to go back and read and see if correspondent said that it was a very short a match as we got on television, which was about a minute and a half. And we'll talk about the match and stuff when we get there. But AW on Twitter, just ripping and cussing, has opened up a new account because I'm sure his AW Promotions account will be shut down by WWE soon enough. He was, as much as the Primetime Players act was good, he was probably the best part of it. And this has to stem from the Kobe rape joke incident, but it's been over a week. Doesn't it seem odd that they would wait about, 10, 12 days, whatever it's been, since he made the Kobe joke to fire him for it? There must have been something else, but I haven't seen or heard anything about him saying something stupid. Have you?
I haven't really been following too closely what the situation was with the McMahon campaign, but I know she came under fire from women's groups, and I'm not sure if it was specifically about the AW incident, but I know it was regarding the WWE. So I don't know if this is just them covering their bases or if this is just a reflection of something, the network might have passed down to them, due to them wanting to keep their PG rating and how USA could have gotten heat for that. So I don't know. I think it's one of those two things. Whether, they get specific about it, I don't think we really never know unless somebody gets some insider information.
Yeah, the political one is the only one I buy as a legitimate possibility, only because of the timing. I would think that if television would know immediately if they're going to catch heat for it. I mean, they would get an immediate response, I think. I don't think they have him on TV another week, and that's when people decide to get upset. But I can see it taking time in the political sphere to churn and people go, I wonder, or for someone to start making, you're right, there is a new women's group out that's opposing Linda McMahon's Senate campaign. Who knows? I like the political angle, like I said, because it makes the timing fit. But I also hate it's almost conspiracy theorist in saying this, but it's to cover Linda's political campaign. It sounds bad when you say it. It sounds almost like a conspiracy theory. So who knows? But he was on there for a second, led to a mess of a finish in a number one contenders match for the tag titles. I assume we'll see some sort of tag title match at SummerSlam I guess the Primetime Players and Epico and Primo. Of course, Rosa Mendez not on this show because of her incident involving her and her fiancé, who was also apparently engaged to someone else. All that information is on the main page if you want to check out the crazy stories we got at the end of this week in wrestling. And then the other big news coming out of this show, Jake, is the match added to SummerSlam, Chris Jericho versus Dolph Ziggler. We had a highlight reel segment. Jericho, at first, Vicky Guerrero came out and said that Dolph wasn't going to lower himself to appear on the show, and she stood in his place. They bickered back and forth. Vicky challenged Jericho to the match for Ziggler. Jericho says that, he's going to prove that, he had been kind of last this year, and that made him reevaluate, and now he's Y2J again. Y2J is back, and now that he is, he's not going to prove he's not lost his focus, and he never, ever will again. Are you surprised to see the hard return of Y2J?
Yeah, I was surprised they couldn't find a little more subtle way to do it. I mean, I guess they're on a compressed time frame now. You know, it's only a couple weeks till, just a little over a week until SummerSlam. But I was surprised by how quickly he just came out and said it. I was thinking he was going to reveal that a little more slowly. But maybe maybe this is just a reflection of the rumors that he's done with WWE, at least on a full-time basis at SummerSlam. But I thought that the match edition was good. I have high expectations for the match, and I've liked what they've done with the angle so far. But it did seem like they kind of hit us over the head with the whole Y2J thing.
Do you think that him saying that he, Y2J was back, he was going to put his legacy speaks for himself, and all that sort of thing. I think we have to assume Ziggler's going over at SummerSlam. I can't believe that Jericho demands a win on the way out. I can't believe that I can see him demanding to lose this match on the way out. We know he's going at least as long as the Uproar Tour because they are doing the vast majority of that tour. Do you think we see Jericho back after the Uproar Tour, though? I think he's got a couple of months off before his overseas tour with Fozzy begins. I might have my date screwed up, but I think there's a break. Do you think that this sets up another short run with WWE towards the end of the year?
I think it's possible. I mean, I think it would be a good hook for, I guess I don't know the specific dates, but Survivor Series or the Royal Rumble or whichever one his break falls upon. I think, a one-off pay-per-view appearance or something would be out of the question. But he definitely seems like, he's putting his music career first, at least for the time being. He doesn't seem as down on WWE as he was the last time he left. But it definitely seems like that would be a possibility. Who knows, though? I mean, really, he may just want a break after touring for a month or two.
And before we break down the show, just one last question about Ziggler and Jericho. Is this the match you're most excited about? It's the one I'm most excited about seeing that night. Is it the same for you?
Well, yeah, just specifically for the reason that I think it's, the only match they have advertised where it seems like they're heading towards, the creation of, maybe a new fixed main eventer. You know, Ziggler appears like he's, headed towards the top of the card, and I think, Jericho putting him over might not mean as much as somebody like Cena or whoever else, Punk or somebody like that, who's a an establishment eventer. But Jericho is a legend in his own right, and even though his last run hasn't been good, it's a significant thing for Ziggler to get a clean win, especially over the Y2J character, which is what Jericho is most remembered for, really.
Yeah, because he's got SmackDown and Raw left to really remind people of who Y2J was and do some fun stuff and really get that crowd behind him. And if Ziggler hurts him, storyline-wise, and knocks him out of the WWE, then that's going to be a nice feather in his cap. Like I said, it's not Cena or Punk, but it's a hell of a win. It would do a lot to launch Ziggler into that main event spot that I think he could do just an outstanding job. I really think he could be the next Ric Flair character to make everybody that he wrestles look like $1 million and then still sneak away with it in the end and yet look competent at the same time. He just strikes me as the guy who can win and make the other guy look good as I've heard attributed to, Gerald Briscoe, I think it was. When you go out there and wrestle, two guys go out there and wrestle, one goes over and the other gets over. And I think Ziggler can be the guy who goes over and the other guy gets over at the same time. Maybe I'm wrong, but I hopefully we'll see soon. And like I said, a win over Jericho would definitely get you there. Let's run through this thing from start to finish again. This was taped on August the 7th in Houston, Texas. It's Booker T's hometown. And so after our standard opening in pyro, we get Booker T introduced in the ring. And he comes out to a good reaction from the hometown crowd. He even gives him a spin-a-rooney. For some reason, he's in a tux. I guess it's because it's his first official SmackDown as general manager in his hometown because, you know, last week he was announced. You would think he would be wearing the tux then, but wearing a tux this time, he did a, you know, Houston, we have a problem joke and played video from Raw of Sheamus stealing Del Rio's car and, you know, bringing it back trash. When they come back to Booker, he's laughing and chuckling and says, boy, it sure did make him, you know, make him smile to see Del Rio flip out about that. He said that Sheamus crossed the line and demanded that, you know, he said Sheamus needs to come out here and apologize in front of the fans. You know, just he had to take care of that. So Sheamus comes out, he takes the mic, and he says that, you know, Del Rio ran him down, he took his dignity, and so he took his car. The whole time you got friggin' Josh Matthews defending Sheamus' position as, oh, well, you know, Del Rio, you know, Del Rio told him that he needed to gain some class. He was just taking Del Rio's advice. He was making kind of same logical type arguments that Michael Cole makes for the heel side, though it sounds stupid and ignorant and forced, and not to mention they're making excuses for the babyface. But nevertheless, he's, you know, he ran down all the things he did with the car and the burrito and how he ended up on the hood, and he's laughing and joking, and he goes, but I did the crime, so I have to do the time. I have to be a big person. And so he wanted to apologize first to Booker T, then to the audience, and then to Alberto Del Rio. And Booker T said, good, now that that's all behind us, we can move on, at which point Del Rio's music hit. But, you know what, I want to stop right there first. Really? I mean, if you do the crime, you have to do the time? I mean, I understand he's the anti-hero and whatever, but did they really just come out and have a guy steal a car that's supposed to be the good guy, steal a car, and then go, well, I did the crime, so I have to do the time. I have to be the big guy and stand up and take my punishment like a man, and so my punishment is to friggin' apologize? Did they really just do that?
Yeah, it was really childish. And, you know, the part that really struck me is that he's not really an anti-hero. I mean, he butters himself up to the fans every week. I mean, you know, people cheered Steve Austin despite the fact that he didn't give a crap about them and only gave a crap about themselves. I mean, the anti-hero position isn't, you know, you act like, you know, you're a fan favorite and you're a goody two-shoes and they cheer you and yet you do despicable things. I mean, you do those despicable things and they cheer you anyway because you're charismatic. I mean, the whole thing just did not fit, and Sheamus didn't play the role, you know, terribly well. It was very awkward to me.
Yeah, I mean, just, oh, God, I was so frustrated. Just, I was like, you put him on board, you stole a friggin' car. Apology? Really? And then, or now that that's behind us, I'm just going to move on. It's so frustrating. No wonder people get upset, you know, about their kids watching this stuff. I would much rather my kid be exposed to a cuss word than their hero just like, I stole a car. My bad. I mean, come on. Anyway. Del Rio's music cuts off Booker T, who had tried to move on. Del Rio rightly comes out and says, no, we're not just moving on from this. This is garbage. I'm going to call the police. I talked to them in San Antonio, and I can file a police report and blah, blah, blah. And Booker T says, well, no, if you do that, that means you won't be able, Sheamus won't be able to defend the title. I'll have to hold it up. And Sheamus says, you know, I've been thinking about this all day. I think that, I've got an answer to this. Let's not wait till SummerSlam. Let's do the match now. Let's do it tonight. Booker T asks Del Rio, and Del Rio says, you know what? Everything in my head says not to do it, but let's do it tonight. And so they book the title match. You know, I didn't want the title match here. Again, I think it's weird how all this ends up playing out, but I thought they did a good job just within the segment of putting some heat on that match. There wasn't a whole lot going into SummerSlam, and I thought they made it important tonight in the way they played all this out. Even though I disagreed with necessarily how they did.
Yeah, I mean, the setup wasn't that good, but I thought Del Rio had a pretty good performance here. He was a lot more intense than, we've seen from him recently. And he came off as, the adult who was who was actually doing something an adult would do if his car was stolen, which was, you know, go for a police report. So that part of it made sense to me, and they could play off of his anger about his car to say he would do something he otherwise wouldn't do and accept the match. So I thought that, you know, when they got there, it made sense, but the car thing was just terrible and juvenile. So, I mean, I guess you got to take the good with the bad. But the way it concluded, you know, I thought it helped Del Rio a bit.
Yeah, no, that's kind of the same thing I'm saying. I don't like what they did to get there, but at the end I was like, you know what? They moved my needle on this match. It's like suddenly I'm interested in the match. Some people are going to immediately stop right there and point and defend and go, well, see, there you go. They got you interested in the match. That's all that matters. I disagree with that. There's certain bridges, you know, they get to a lot of matches a lot of ways that absolutely destroy characters. I don't think there's anybody that wants to defend those sorts of things. So, just because they got there doesn't mean they got there in the most effective way. But they did get there. They put some heat on this match. We come back from commercial. You've got Sin Cara making his ring entrance. Cody Rhodes comes out next. I don't think either guy got, you know, too much of a response from the Houston crowd. I thought Cody might get a response in Texas, but nothing stood out to me. And the same said for Sin Cara, who I thought might get a response in Texas too, but not in Houston. Cody cut a promo on his way to the ring. He said he used to be under the mask as well. He's not against people wearing masks, but he knew why Sin Cara did it. He did it because he's ugly. He's cockeyed and got one ear bigger than the other. And that, he also wore the mask because he knew underneath that mask there was absolutely nothing special about him, and that led into the match. Before we even get to the match, the hell kind of promo was that? I mean, that was kind of brutal, wasn't it? The ugly stuff was silly, but the nothing special about you seemed kind of pointed.
Yeah, it certainly did, and I guess it gets Cody over as a kind of a ruthless heel. And, you know, maybe they have to do something drastic like that to get people involved in the Sin Cara storyline, since he can't really, you know, retort in any meaningful way. He has to become sympathetic just because, you know, people are just railing on him. And maybe that'll work. I don't know. But it was definitely something unorthodox from Cody Rhodes.
And that led to our first match of the night. Sin Cara defeating Cody Rhodes at 3:44. Pretty good match here. You get, Sin Cara hitting all his moves. I thought Cody started strong. I liked the very first part of this match. I thought they were setting a good pace. You get Cody hitting a drop kick on Sin Cara out of the air and, some different things like that. Cody keeps going for the mask. At that point, you kind of know how it's going to play out. And sure enough, at one point, he goes to pull the mask off. Sin Cara is fighting him, reaches up with his legs to grab Cody's arm and kind of rolls him up in a modified small package for a surprise victory. Sin Cara flees, you know, leaves the ring, backs up the ramp. They stare off at each other, and Sin Cara pulls his mask out, points to it, shakes his head no. You know, the match was short. It was a little under 4 minutes, and I enjoyed what they did. And they could probably have a pretty good match on pay-per-view. I don't expect to see it at SummerSlam, but I'm saying they could have a pretty good, you know, longer match on a pay-per-view that would be fun to watch. But, you know, the one thing I hope they don't do is try to use Sin Cara's mask as some sort of major storyline gimmick here, because I don't think people care enough about him to care if he loses his mask. If it was a feud over Rey Mysterio's mask, people would buy into that. But Sin Cara, I don't think anybody cares enough.
Yeah, and he literally does not know enough English to be a talker. So taking the mask off would just be more bizarre. But I thought the match was okay. I mean, there were a couple of points where I'm not sure if it was miscommunication or what. There was a botch towards the end with which I thought might have been the planned finish, where he looked like he was going to go for his finish, kind of fell off of Cody, and Cody was just kind of left standing there flexing. But overall it was pretty good. Like you said, the early part of the match was pretty well done, and then they had that unfortunate mishap at the end. But I think a feud is possible here. I mean, they're both generally pretty good, and hopefully they can iron out the kinks if they have further matches down the road.
Yeah, we'll have to we'll have to see. They had a couple little rough moments at the end. You're right, and I don't know. I think they can do both guys some favors here and get Sin Cara a little bit over more and kind of repair Cody here if they play this smart. I, It's just that they try to use the mask. I don't think people care enough to you know, because the ultimate conclusion of that should be mask versus hair or something like that, because Cody doesn't have a title. And who cares if Cody Rhodes gets his head shaved either? They just need to be careful how they can have Cody messing with him with the mask, but they need to make sure that it's done in the right way, where it's not just about the mask. I don't think it's enough to drive the story forward. We get Daniel Bryan backstage yelling no at random people, and after a commercial, we get a Wade Barrett video that teases his return and shows him returning to his bare knuckle brawler. Roots in Great Britain. Great video. I was digging every second of it. I was like, wow, they're really making Barrett look like a total badass when he comes back. This is friggin' awesome. And then he says, I'm Wade Barrett and my barrage is just beginning. Are we really going back to Barrett's barrage?
They actually aired this one on Monday, too. I don't know, maybe you didn't catch it, but that was the part. I think Jason mentioned it in his Raw report, too. It's just like, oh, the barrage thing again? Like, we're going back to this? I don't know. It just flopped so badly the first time that I can't believe they're rebooting it now. But, it appears we're going there. I mean, the video, like you said, was great, and then it was just, pissing into the wind there at the end with the barrage thing. But, yeah, that's... I like Barrett, so I hope it works. But it's if they could just drop that, I think it would have been fantastic.
Yeah, I missed it Monday. I didn't watch live Monday night because I was coming off the whole weekend and had some errands I had to run, and so I watched it on delay, and I must have just fast forwarded through it and missed it somehow. But yeah, I was the whole time. I'm like, wow, this is friggin' fantastic. Oh no, the Barrett barrage, not again. That was just a tragic moment, right? Well, I promise I'll stop using the word tragic. That was a upsetting moment for me, to say the least. Daniel Bryan, his crazy video play, the one that shows all, him getting attacked by Kane and going through the psychological evaluation, the one they've been playing for a couple of weeks now, gets another airing. We have Daniel Bryan making his ring entrance. He's getting, of course, getting, yes chants from the crowd, and he's yelling no back. He takes the mic and immediately starts going back and forth with the crowd. No, yes, no, yes, no, yes. Then they stop there. He screamed it, and then they just chanted it at him. He kind of collapsed in the middle of the ring with his head in his hand. He's getting this yes gimmick over. The fans love this. Don't they? I mean, the live crowds just eat this crap up.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I get kind of tired of it watching it on television, but the live audience is just it's just a riot for this stuff in there. So I don't know how you stop it, but it definitely is over, and Brian is continuing to get it over. I just hope it doesn't become his entire character, because there's just a lot more, good to be drawn out of Brian than just the yes-no chance.
Yeah, and when I say they eat this crap up, I didn't mean crap in an ugly way per se. He gets kind of old watching it, two, three, four times a week. But the live crowd, this is the thing they come for now. They come to chant yes at Daniel Bryan. He said that he was more than a catchphrase, that he was a former champion, and he should be in the WWE match WWE title match, at SummerSlam. He said instead he'd been put into a match with Kane by the woman who cruelly left him at the altar. He asked if he deserved that, and of course we went back to the yes-no gimmick with the crowd again. He said he deserved better than AJ and Kane, but I wish I could have typed all of this because he was hilarious here. He said he deserved better than some little skippy business suit wearing something-something and her overgrown Frankenstein monster thing. Like, he's just ranting on both of them. And I started laughing. I thought it was great there. Kane's pyro pops at that moment as he's talking trash about Kane. He comes to the ring, and Brian backs away and starts to leave the ring. But then AJ comes out in her business suit. She tells him he better not dare leave that ring. She joins the two men in the ring. They're just staring at each other and said, I'm sure you're wondering why I'm here, but Booker asked me to be here as a guest. She said she booked him in a match at SummerSlam, but she did it because they were both incredible athletes, but that she had a problem. She couldn't have them out there attacking and have Daniel Bryan coming out attacking the fans and those two attacking each other every week. She kind of flirted with Kane a little bit and thanked him for his kindness when she was going through all the stuff earlier and off. Kane just stared at her. He didn't even really react. AJ went over to Brian and started talking to him. She goes, you know, I realize you've never pinned Kane in a match, but, you know, if you don't have any anger, if you're as sane as you say you are, if you don't have any anger management issues, then prove it. Shake Kane's hand. Brian, no, no, not going to do that. And the crowd chanted yes. Brian screamed no. And AJ goes, no, really, shake his hand. And he still refused no, no, I'm not going to do it. And then she got right in his face and said, do it now, Daniel. So Brian sticks his hand out. I just pulled the record real fast. I don't understand why she has this much control. I realize she's the GM, but it's ridiculous how they're kind of playing her being able to control him like this. He sticks his hand out and just waits. Kane's just staring at them still. AJ looks, you know, excited and then leaves the ring. As soon as she touches the ground, Kane punches Brian in the throat. They start brawling around, jockeying back and forth for position. Brian's going for the no lock, but Kane kicks him, and Brian falls to the floor. He jumps the rail and flees through the crowd. Kane slides back in the ring. AJ's standing on the stage, drops to her knees in the crazy way that she does, says, that was awesome, and starts laughing, and then, or that was great, that's what it was, and starts laughing. Kane gives her the confused puppy dog look, and then pops his pyro to leave her sitting looking crazy on up on the stage again. I like the segment. It's weird. I don't necessarily like her all that much anymore. She's kind of starting to get on my nerves in this role. She's just too forceful in a lot of ways. And she's very nebulous as a heel babyface character. So, I mean, this is kind of like the opening segment in that Daniel Bryan is really the one getting wrong here in a lot of real ways, and yet he's the heel, and we're cheering the person who's doing the wronging. And I'm not a big fan of AJ manipulating Kane anymore. That's kind of, you know, that ship's kind of sailed for me. But I thought taking kind of like the opening segment, again, taken as a whole, this was effective, and everybody came out of this looking good, even if I didn't necessarily like the individual components of it. What do you think?
Well, like you said, I thought Brian was very good here. You know, I think the biggest question mark when they named AJ the GM was, well, you know, how are they going to keep this compelling now that she actually has power? Because, you know, it's one thing for, you know, a small woman who, you know, by stature just has very little physical power, you know, using her mind games to, you know, to reap havoc on, you know, several stars like she was with the, you know, the Punk and Brian and Kane feud. I mean, that's interesting, but if you give her all this power, you know, then you have to do really clever things with the people she's tormenting to make it fun, and I don't think they've successfully done that really thus far with Brian and Kane. I mean, Brian's performances have been very good, and he's, you know, he's kind of turned, you know, made mountains out of molehills as far as, you know, what creative it's given him, but the rest of it just hasn't been that interesting to me. And I know Kane and Brian is going to be good. I mean, they've had good matches before, but there's just, you know, there's nothing that really sucks me into wanting to see that again. I've seen it too recently and too much recently.
Yeah, I mean, as I said in .NET Weekly on Thursday with Jason, everybody sleeps on Kane all the time. I mean, people just are like, oh, God, Kane. And they come out of the match and they go, wow, Kane really wrestles his ass. Kane always wrestles his ass off. He is not going to work with every single person on the roster. There's no question about that. But you give him the right opponent, and there's a lot of right opponents for Kane. I mean, if you get a guy that can at least halfway work, then, you know, then Kane can put on a very good match. And, you know, there's no question that Brian can work. So I'm looking forward to the match. But, yeah, the storyline is not great. I kind of want to see what they're going to do with AJ. She needs to settle into a character. Getting away from Brian right now would probably be good. So hopefully this is a blow-off to whatever it is they've been doing. But much like the opening, I don't like how they're getting there. Let's see. After commercial, we have Jinder Mahal putting his hat in the box at ringside. And just real quick, because you weren't here, I can't remember if it was last week or 2 weeks ago, but they finally said why he's putting his hat, his turban, into the glass box at ringside, or the plastic box at ringside. I don't know if you called up on that or not, but even if you did, if you didn't, because we talked about this so many times, so I have to get your thoughts on, he does it because he doesn't want to catch germs from the WWE universe.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I mean, I guess, you know, it's something that you know, that a smarmy elitist heel would do. You know, I guess I get that part, but to leave it unexplained for so long and then just kind of, it just kind of felt like a cop out, like, oh, he's a germaphobe or something. You know, I don't know. It didn't really carry much weight with me, but I get it, but it doesn't really interest me. And that goes for Mahal, too, before it gets here.
Yeah, like, really? All that time for this? We get a cut-in video while he's finishing his entrance, showing him saying that for Ryback to pay attention as he defeated two opponents tonight. He said, Ryback says, feed me more. But the way he sees it, Ryback's eyes are bigger than his stomach. That led to our second match of the night. Jinder Mahal defeating two guys named Fred is how I put it. I don't even know if they showed the guy's name. If they did, I missed it. 39 seconds on this match. Mahal points out that it's a traditional handicap match where they have to tag in. So he hits the first guy with the clothesline, a slam. He slaps himself in the head like he's right back and puts the guy in the camel clutch for the tap-out victory. Then he drags the other guy in the ring, beats him up, drops him on top of his buddy, and puts both guys in the camel clutch. That was, at least I thought, that they put some effort into that. That kind of made me chuckle a little bit. Or not, I don't know what made me laugh. It wasn't supposed to make me laugh, but I appreciated the fact there was some thought put into that. Ryback's music hit. He comes to the ring. Mahal stands there like he's going to lock it up with Ryback, but then bails to the floor. So what does Ryback do? He grabs both guys who are knocked out, picks them both up, and does his double finisher on both of them. He still has the pink eye. It wasn't as bad as last week, but he still got pink eye, it looks like, or whatever was wrong with his eye. As I wrote in my report, and it's the truth, I appreciate the fact that they put some effort into this. You know, the undercard as a whole is mostly ignored, and they just stick random guys out there together, and they kind of told a story here. It sucked. The story was terrible, but at least they gave a story. So I'll give them credit for putting effort into it, but this is, I mean, really, Jinder Mahal is the guy who's going to get Ryback over? I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, it really feels like, you know, just kind of introducing him into the main roster, I mean, more or less. I mean, nobody takes Jinder Mahal seriously as a threat to Ryback. And, you know, I guess it's, you know, if they're going for a little bit of comedy in the respect that, you know, they're both competing to see who can crush two jobbers in the most interesting way, I guess that, you know, that's kind of an interesting game of one-upsmanship. But, I mean, it's I just can't, you know, take Mahal seriously. I mean, he's just not very interesting in the ring or as a character. And I wish there was more, you know, to him, but they just haven't really been able to tell a good story with him. And Ryback, I don't know. I mean, I don't see anything new from him from week to week. So it's hard to really gauge the progress. I mean, you got to give him credit for putting some effort into the lower card, and you know, you did so rightfully, but it just didn't feel like it was, you know, anything but just trying to basically, as limited as possible, put Ryback in a feud with one of the, you know, the superstar guys, I guess, to you know, try to introduce him into that maybe Intercontinental U.S. title scene.
Well, and to kind of continue, this was really, you know, the last bit of the first hour leading into the top of the second hour with Jericho, but just real quick, it's kind of continuing with the opening, the theme of the opening hour of the show. You have Ryback coming out and beating up two helpless guys and getting cheered for it after Mahal got booed for it. Why, you know, it's mostly a rhetorical question, but it kind of, like I said, it goes to everything that's going on. And I think speaks a lot to why it's hard for WWE to tell stories in the more, is because there's no clear-cut good guy, bad guy in most of these characters. Is why would you cheer Ryback over Mahal? What did Ryback do to deserve a cheer that Mahal didn't?
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's part of it too. I mean, the feed me more thing seems like it's actually over. I mean, there were some audible chants for that, but you know, there's only, you know, so much you can do with this big gorilla. I mean, without giving him a personality, and Mahal isn't that much of a personality either to really draw it out of it. So it just seems like both of these characters are going to tread water in this feud. I mean, obviously we're going to see Ryback eventually get his hands on Mahal and beat him, but will he have gained anything as a result of it? I doubt it. I mean, Mahal isn't anything to, you know, but a notch in anyone's belt at this point. He hasn't really beaten anyone in, what, 6-8 months?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't remember the last time that he got any type of real win. So probably over Ted DiBiase, and at some point I think might have been it. Oh, well, we'll see how it happens with the right back after commercial. Chris Jericho makes his ring entrance. The ring is, of course, set up for the highlight reel. He starts to introduce his guest, but Vicky Guerrero does her excuse me gimmick and cuts him off. She says that she's there to speak for her client because Dolph Ziggler will not lower himself to appear on Chris Jericho's show. Jericho said that was fine with him. If he couldn't talk to Ziggler, he talked to his mother, which, of course, got Vicky screaming at him. He says, Vicky, you know, let's be serious. You do look very good for a woman of your age. She screams, excuse me, back. He yells it back at her. They yell it a few times. It descends into her just screaming and jumping up and down. Jericho tells her to calm down. He's really being the smart ass, you know, that just really smarmy, super smarmy character that he can be. Tells her to calm down, and, you know, he says, he asks her, I'm going to lose the place here. Jericho told her to calm down, said that if he insulted her one more time, she was going to walk off his show. He mocked her, you're going to walk off my show? Acted like he was going to cry, and then said, well, get the hell out of there. She turned on her heel and went to leave. Jericho told her to wait, calm down. You know, she was so tense and angry all the time. He said he could understand if she was miffed after what happened on Raw when he played the video of Dolph Ziggler getting beat by Alex Riley on Raw because of Jericho's non-interference, distraction, if you will, messing with him, taking video of the match at ringside. Vicky says that he said that he lost to Alex Riley, that Ziggler lost to Alex Riley, who prior to that had won a single match in all of 2012, and that record was worse than Vicky's guy job. He said that, you know, Ziggler should be pointing fingers at him because Ziggler couldn't even win the little one. Vicky said that she and Ziggler knew the truth, that they knew Jericho had lost touch, and they knew he had lost a step, that, you know, he couldn't win any of the big ones. His record all year proved it. She said that he would prove it, that they would be able to prove it if Jericho would face Ziggler at SummerSlam. Jericho said that he didn't have to prove himself to anyone, that, you know, his accomplishments stood on their own. He said, but he had a bad year. He had not done well with the big ones this year, and it made him go back and reevaluate who he was, and now he was Y2J again. Probably the most, the biggest shoot turn I've ever heard in my life for someone just goes, now call me this. It was a little bit awkward and weird the way he just said it. He accepted the match in SummerSlam and said that he would prove there that he had not lost his touch and he never, ever would again. He acted like he was going to leave, but then Ziggler ran in from behind, swung at him with the briefcase. Jericho ducked and beat up Ziggler, beat him up pretty good, turned around to face Vicky, stormed over to her. Vicky slapped him in the face, screamed at him he would never talk to her like that again. Jericho, you know, held his jaw for a minute, then smiled at her, took a couple of steps towards her as she started to back away. Ziggler attacks him from behind with the zigzag and then stood there and screamed for Jericho to stand up. When he did, he hit him with the briefcase, and then Vicky took the mic and said, who's your mama now? And her man left the ring, leaving Jericho knocked out. Great segment. It was very clunky at the beginning, all the screaming and the Vicky, calm down, you're so tense, and all of that was really bad. But they settled in nicely after the video package, and I thought that Ziggler looked like $1 million here, and this is the single match I am most looking forward to at SummerSlam.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I mean, like I mentioned earlier, you know, it's really the only match on the card that screams, you know, new star building, and I think that's, you know, one of the most important things that WWE needs to do, you know, at this juncture. So. I'm looking forward to watching what those two can put together. They're both great in the ring. And, you know, despite Jericho being, you know, further along in his career, I think this is probably the best he's probably looked, I mean, physically in his entire WWE run. So I don't think, you know, despite the story that he's lost much of a step anywhere, and I think he and Ziggler are going to do something really fun at a pay-per-view. And, you know, the angle tonight, you know, like we mentioned, it was a little bit over the top how quickly you know, Jericho just kind of did an about face on the Y2J thing. But other than that, you know, I thought this put a lot of heat on Ziggler, and obviously that was the intention. And I think they made the right call ultimately, just because I think the Y2J character is a good, you know, babyface to put over the emerging heel in Ziggler. So I really do think this is going to be you know, something to look out for as a show stealer at SummerSlam. Excuse me.
Cannot wait for this match. After commercial, third match of the night, Primetime Players defeated, well, Primetime Players faced Epico and Primo in a number one contenders match for the WWE Tag Team Championships, and this lasted a whopping minute and 43 seconds. The Primetime Players were declared the winners, but, you know, we get this ambiguous finish. Really, we got about 30, 40 seconds of wrestling in the ring. All four guys ended up, you know, getting in within the first 45 seconds. But then everything cuts to the floor. It seemed almost like this was cut. I don't know if AW said something here, and that's what led to, and they had to cut it out, and that's what led to him being fired today or whatever. I don't know, but it just seemed, the timing on it was kind of awkward. It seemed like there might have been a cut there. Maybe there wasn't. It just everything looked weird the way they suddenly went to the floor. And AW throws water in the face of R-Truth and Kofi Kingston, who had joined the commentary team for the match. They go after AW, who slides to the ring, and they end up attacking AW and Titus O'Neil, causing a disqualification. And so your Primetime Players won the match. I guess they're the number one contender. The announce team put it over as it was AW's plan. Of course, AW has now been fired by WWE, so I don't know how that's going to play out. I don't know if they're going to retroactively award Epico and Primo. I don't know if they'll make it a triple threat. I don't know if the intent was to make it a triple threat. I mean, AW getting fired, as confusing as this segment was in and of itself, him getting fired just kind of leaves you, that knowledge going in and watching this play out when it was over kind of left me going, I don't know where the hell they're going with it.
Yeah, it really is. You know, hard to figure out where this goes from here. I mean, they do have a number one contenders match. You know, whether they now try to add, you know, Primo and Epico to that, you know, as a last minute addition, make it a triple threat, or, you know, how they proceed now that AEW is not in the picture, it's all pretty well up in the air. I mean, we really can't make any predictions without just completely speculating. So we'll have to see where it goes on Monday. I mean, this was just kind of a throwaway match. It looked like, you know, the way they wanted to tell the story was that AW saw things were going poorly, and so, you know, he caused the distraction that got the DQ. But it all happened pretty quickly, so there wasn't much of a match to comment on. And with the controversy around, you know, what AW's comments and his release, I mean, there's, you don't know if this push is over or if it's just starting or if it's just going to morph into something different, or who knows.
Antonio Cesaro makes his ring entrance with Oksana, and they take a mic. It says that he would like to say something in five different languages. Oksana called out, you know, each language's name, and then he said the word, and it ended up, he finished with English, the word being victory. He then said something else in another language. I don't know if it was Swiss or if it was French. I'm not as clear, but it was one of those two, I believe. But then he closed in English by saying, and if you didn't understand that, that's the point. So I guess I'm the schmuck here. Christian makes his ring entrance, and that, we went to commercial. When we came back, we get our fourth match of the night, Christian defeating Antonio Cesaro in 4 minutes and 9 seconds. The finish on this comes, there was a lot of back and forth, both guys getting out of each other's kind of signature spots. Cesaro, they actually botched at one point. Cesaro was lifting Christian for his gut-wrench slam. Christian flips all the way over. Cesaro kind of held on and fell a little bit, but they just showed you how athletic both guys are. They kind of stopped it from hitting the mat. Christian recovered, pulled him back up, and reversed that into his then-reverse DDT. He went for the spear. Cesaro popped him up, hit the European uppercut, and for a nice spot and a really great fall. He covered real fast, and it was just a real hot moment within the match. But then Christian ends up ducking the neutralizer, they're calling it, and hit the spear for the win. And then post-match, Christian celebrating on the second rope to the fans. And Oksana gets on the apron, and they start jawing back and forth, which allows Cesaro to knock him to the floor from behind. He hops down there, picks him up, and then slams Christian back first into the retaining rail before he and Oksana leave. I like Antonio Cesaro, Jake. I like Christian. I like the idea of them in a feud together. And I really hope that this is not a move to get them away from the U.S. title. I hope that Cesaro ultimately wins the U.S. title and that Christian his first feud for it, because that could bring, A, a lot of heat on Cesaro, and B, a lot of heat back onto that title.
Yeah, I think Cesaro is a good fit for the U.S. title because he's, you know, he's the kind of cocky, you know, elitist, you know, I guess they're trying to portray him as a foreign heel that, you know, can speak multiple languages, and, you know, by holding the U.S. title, he can, you know, do his anti-U.S. shtick and make some hay with it. And I think Christian's a good opponent for him, just because, you know, he's a veteran, he's skilled. You know, he's had great matches everywhere with a lot of people in the WWE, and I think he can really, you know, kind of show off what Cesaro can do, you know, which is what we're not going to see in a match with somebody like Santino. So I like the idea of Cesaro and Christian. I wish, you know, they'd give Cesaro a little bit more speaking time. I think he is very competent on the microphone, and I'd like to hear, you know, more about what his character has to say, but, you know, maybe that's down the road, so I guess I can't pick on it too much.
And he got more time here. I mean, he, you know, it's been nothing, and then it was, excuse me, it was hello in five languages, and then today it was victory and, you know, another line in a foreign language. And if anyone, you know, knows what he said and would like to send me an email, css3238@gmail.com. I'd love to know what he said. We'll even put it on the site for you if you can let me know. Translate it for me. After commercial, we get the Raw rebound, and then Eve is backstage in all of her, you know, office school teacher, you know, pre-porn outfit that everybody, you know, just somebody there has a fetish for women in pantsuits. It's all I can, because they're always in. You got AJ, you got Eve. But anyway, he's back there. Booker T walks in. He says, "I'm confused. Why, you know, what's this meeting about?" She said, "Well, I just want to know if there's anything in your administration. You know, if there is, I'm willing to take any job." Teddy says, "No, there's no spots available at all. Sorry, I'm all pulled up." Teddy Long walks in at that moment with Caitlin and says, "Here's who I was talking about, Booker." Caitlin says she's super excited that Booker T is the GM and heard that he needed an assistant and was curious if she could be that person, and Booker T said, "If you come recommended by Teddy Long, then you, that's good enough for me. You're hired." Eve kind of flips out and says, "You told me there was nothing here." She goes, "I don't know what kind of revenge scheme Teddy Long has got you believing, but I'm going to the board of directors. This isn't right." And so Booker T's solution then is to say, "We'll have a match next week, and whichever one of you can beat up the other one in the ring the best gets to be my executive assistant as general manager." He doesn't like the idea and storms off, but everybody else seems to like it. So I guess next week we get Caitlin versus Eve, with the winner being your new executive assistant to the SmackDown GM. That's big stuff, right? Like, I need to put that in the and put it as a sticky at the top of the page, don't I?
Yeah, riveting. I kind of wonder, I don't know if I maybe missed something in catching up while I was gone or what, but have they put Layla on television at all recently? I mean, it seems like we have AJ and Eve and Caitlin and, you know, and they had Kelly return on Monday. I just haven't, I haven't seen the Divas Champion on TV in quite some time. But, yeah, this backstage segment was okay. I guess we're, you know, they're going to try to continue, you know, Eve and Teddy's little feud. Maybe, you know, that's the tip-off that Eve is going to get the win next week, and they're going to have kind of a, you know, the administration on SmackDown is going to have some internal conflict. I mean, that seems like something that they would find interesting. So, but it wasn't badly acted, but it just wasn't all that interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. It's, I can't remember the last time I saw Layla on TV. You're right. Now that you mentioned it, I don't know. This is the best they can do. I mean, this is the best they can do for Eve. This is the best they can do for Kayla. I think about the girls who are in FCW. You've got Sophia and Paige down there who are just outstanding athletes in the ring. And I'm like, oh, my God, they're going to get brought up into this garbage. This is the best they can come up with, is Caitlin versus Eve for the executive assistant position. How very disrespectful to the women. But, yeah, I don't know. And I don't care enough, again, about GM storylines to care anymore about this whole thing. It's just been done to death. I can't believe this continues to be a major storyline in wrestling in 2012. But nevertheless, we soldier on. Rey Mysterio makes his ring entrance, and after the commercial, he and The Miz hook up for our fifth match of the night, and Rey Mysterio defeats him at 4 minutes and 43 seconds. Good, quick match from these two. Lots of back and forth stuff. Miz does a good job beating up Rey through most of the match. Rey gets in a bunch of big hope spots. Rey ends up setting him up for a 619, but Miz grabs him by the feet, hits a knee to his stomach, pulls him out of the ropes and tries to do a skull-crushing finale, but Ray reverses that into a roll-up for the win. And then just both guys, you know, Miz is sitting in the ring looking frustrated. Ray is still in the ring just looking at him, and they cut away from there, and either guy flees the ring or anything like that. They just kind of leave it with, you know, both guys respecting each other enough not to, to go after each other. It was a fun match. It was very short, and it ends up being the main event of the show, which is kind of, you know, frustrating on in some degree. We open and close the huge talking segment on SmackDown. Usually we get a match at the end, and I'm not a big fan of you know, not at least getting a match, or at least attempting of a match here at the end. But, you know, with Ray and Miz, I just don't know. I don't know if they're telling the story with Miz, if they're putting these two together in a feud. It seems positioned odd. The way they acted at the end didn't seem to propel the story forward in any way. I don't know. This seemed like the most filler of anything on the show, because it was the only thing that didn't seem to have at least some sort of plan behind it.
Yeah, I mean, they made some allusion to it being related to that Raw active thing they did on Monday. With the polling, wasn't that what it was?
Yeah, who was going to face CM Punk and Rey Mysterio won, so he had to face Kane. No, I understand there was a little bit of backstory, but then it just seemed to stop. Like there was nothing that makes me want to tune in next week to see what's going on between Rey and Miz.
Yeah, no, I mean I'm with you there. I mean, if they wanted to start a feud, you know, it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense for. You know, the Miz to continue his losing streak. So I think maybe that's the story here. I mean, you know, Miz selling his continued frustration with his return. It seems like whenever he's in the ring with, main event wrestlers or near main event wrestlers, he hasn't had any success at all. So, maybe that's the story, and they're trying to build Miz back up for, to head back to the main event with a different character or something. But there wasn't a whole lot to grab onto here. It was pretty basic. I mean, the match was okay, but, it was too short to really go anywhere spectacular.
Yeah, I said that's kind of my thing, is what's the story they're telling? You know, are they spinning them into a feud? If so, they kind of put the brakes on it here. Are they telling the story that the Miz, is having a hard time beating upper level characters, like upper level wrestlers, main event wrestlers, if you will? Then they kind of needed to allude to that more in the on commentary. Commentary didn't do a good enough job of getting that over. So I don't know. It just seemed kind of thrown out there. It had a hook from Raw, sure, but it, I don't know, it didn't seem necessary coming out of Raw, and then they found a way to get them together, but then I don't know what purpose it served. So it's just kind of sitting out there, not really sure what it is at this point. It's like that little thing when you go to a restaurant for the first time and there's something on your plate, you're not entirely sure if you're supposed to eat it or not. It's kind of that ambiguous, well, I don't know, sort of thing. What are they doing with this? But after commercial, we get our Be a Star video. Then Del Rio and Sheamus make their ring entrances. We get the traditional old-school style ring introductions after both guys are in the ring. You've got Ricardo Rodriguez doing Alberto Del Rio's, and then Lillian Garcia doing Sheamus's. They're just getting ready to square off when suddenly Del Rio starts begging for a mic. He starts yelling, no, 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 go back, go back. They shoot up the ramp, and there's cops. There's, four or five cops coming down the ramp, and Del Rio's yelling, no, 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 go back. I didn't call you yet. I didn't file the report. No, I want to get my championship match. No, no, no. And they keep coming down the ring. They all climb up on the apron, and he screams, stop, and they all stop there. Sheamus looks around. Del Rio suddenly grins and says, go. And all the cops jump in the ring and attack Sheamus. Obviously, now they're not the police. They're hired guns, as Michael Cole put it, or Josh Matthews one put it, for Del Rio. They start to beat up on Sheamus, but Sheamus gets the better of them immediately. He grabs Del Rio, drives him back into the corner, starts wailing on him, but the cops recover, attack Sheamus, beat him down, drag him back to the opposite corner, stomping a mud hole in him. They hold him up so Del Rio can talk junk to him. Del Rio hits a drop kick. They just turn the screws on Sheamus. Del Rio waits for Sheamus to try to make his feet, and when he does, he grabs his arm, hooks in the cross arm breaker, wrenches back on it for a little bit, and then breaks the hold, stands up over a squirming, hurt Sheamus to close out the show, and a nice visual for Del Rio. He looked like a badass here, and it certainly helped. I still think it's too little too late. But again, I'm a little frustrated we at least didn't get an attempt at a match, a real attempt at a match, and then some sort of screwy thing at the end. I'm used to that. What ended up being more of a talking segment than a match segment was a little bit frustrating. But you know, there wasn't a lot of talking. It's just there wasn't a match, and I like closing SmackDown with a match. We almost always get talk at the end of Raw. It's what I'm just me. I'm just crying because I'm spoiled. But I thought they did as much as they could here. But again, we get you knew there would be some fallout, and WWE has released the video again of Booker T canceling the match for SummerSlam. I assume we get it back in some format again. But so what they did was okay. I think it's too little, too late. But it wasn't a terrible way to close the show, even though I would have rather had a match.
Yeah, I'm kind of in your ballpark. I would have rather have seen a long match. I mean, they kind of telegraphed it when they finally finished the ring introductions with literally 4 minutes left until the show was over. But, the match at least had some momentum. I mean, you were excited to see it. But I don't know if it's just me, but it seems like WWE rent-a-cops look less officious all the time. You could kind of tell they're in like prop uniforms and they're just local wrestlers or something. And they don't even try to make it look authentic anymore, which is kind of a shame. But it was all right for what it was. I mean, I like that Del Rio gets the momentum here and looks strong. But I don't know if it's really going to make him seem credible in a pay-per-view match again. I mean, if anything, they buy themselves some time to come up with something more creative, adding another person to this match or whatever the case may be. But it's we covered it before. I mean, it just hasn't been that interesting, and I'm not sure that this can save it. I mean, adding Orton might help, create some interest and cast some doubt on the outcome. I mean, I think that's the most important thing they have to do. Maybe it's not Orton. Maybe it's somebody else. Who knows? But they have to do something with this match to make it feel, like a World Heavyweight Championship match that would fit into a SummerSlam show.
You know what's funny about all this is that, with the whole anti-hero thing that we talked about earlier, there's still reasons to boo Del Rio, even if Sheamus has done the bad things. Del Rio does, too. And he did a bad thing here, but I didn't feel like I should boo Del Rio for what he did. I felt like going, well, Sheamus shouldn't have stole his car. He got jumped. He got laid out by a bunch. He stole a man's car and all he offered was an apology. Don't steal somebody's car if you don't want your ass beat. I think they kind of hurt Sheamus a little bit in this respect because I think a lot of people, I don't know that everybody certainly, I think he's going to be sympathetic mostly because people want to cheer Sheamus and so they'll make excuses, but I think a lot of people looked at that as, he did steal his car. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely felt like, well, I guess you had that coming. I mean, if somebody beat, or stole your car and trashed it and it was $300,000-$400,000 Ferrari, you'd probably, you're probably the kind of guy that would have the money to hire some help and go put the boots to him. So, I mean, it didn't seem that out of place for Del Rio at all. And it kind of puts the spotlight on how exactly out of character that initial, thing was on Monday, which was really just a glorified tout advertisement, if you ask me.
Yeah, no doubt. But that was the way we closed. We have one more week till SummerSlam, one more Raw, one more SmackDown, and I guess we'll find out on Raw. Maybe we'll have to wait till SmackDown to find out what the new World Heavyweight Championship match will be. Again, I would expect Del Rio and Sheamus in some form, just not in a straight-up singles match. It's going to be Extreme Rules. It's going to be Falls Count Anywhere, Last Man Standing, something, some sort of gimmick match to allow these two to allow Sheamus to get his revenge, or they'll add a third person. Randy Orton says he's not wrestling, and that's why he's not been in the ads, and if they're going to add them, they'll have to do it in the next two shows. But that's all I've got this week. Jake, anything you want to add before we get out of here?
No, I think we covered it all, man. Everybody just have a good weekend.
Good, and I'm glad you're back. It's so much more fun to do these with two people instead of just me, and I'm sure you helped break up the the Southern awesomeness that I protrude into the microphone each and every week. But thanks for being back. Glad you had a good vacation and that you're all rested up. Jake and I will be back next week. I'm not covering the show. I will be doing TV tapings for PWX Wrestling down in, let's see, Friday night I'll be in York, South Carolina. So if you're in the York, South Carolina area, stop in for PWX. And Maria Kanellis and Mike Bennett will be there from Ring of Honor, as will Kevin Steen and Steve Corino. And I get to live my dream and call a match with Steve Corino. I've said that ever since the last Ring of Honor pay-per-view, and I'm going to do it this next weekend. But Jake and I will be back with your audio review next Saturday morning. Until then, thank you guys for listening. Thank you so much for your support of .NET. And go ahead right now, folks, if you're not a .NET member, get access to all 6 hours of audio, access to the .NET members free site, the ad-free version, or excuse me, the ad-free version of the site, not the free site, the ad-free version of the site, and access to our .NET member forum and our .NET member blog section by heading over to ProWrestling.net. Click on the right-hand side of the page for the .NET member sign-up. $7.50 a month, $5.50 a month if you take the annual option. We will see you back next week, everyone. Have a great weekend. Take care.